I can post it. Well, all right. At least, no, look at this. When you agree, you know, it's like you give an inch and you take a foot. Okay, now, let's go. I'll go over a little bit about format and stuff and things and all those things. A little bit I'll go over toward the end of the class. Okay, and now we are in a different region now, the upper extremity. Okay, now the entire thing here, as you look at it here, you have the upper limb or the upper extremity. Now, why do I insist upon people learning the right terminology for each of these areas? When you look at it here, it helps you. That's the reason. Because here you see shoulder. So what are the parts here of the upper extremity? Just like in case of the lower extremity, you have the thigh, the leg, you know, whatnot. So here you have the shoulder. Then you have the brachial. And you say the arm, but there is no arm artery. But there's the brachial artery. See, there's the brachial artery. See, it becomes these terminologies, anatomical terminologies, medical terminologies, you know, it becomes handy for you when you know what is brachial, where is brachial. Then you can easily say brachial vein, brachial artery. So that is, you know, the other reason. And then we have the forearm, which is the antebrachial. So antebrachial or forearm, you know, so antebrachial cutaneous nerve. When you see that nerve written, antebrachial cutaneous nerve. So the cutaneous nerve that is coming into the forearm, coming into the forearm. And so wrist and hand, so here, manus, you know, is, you know, the hand, wrist, you know, because wrist is wrist. And so here, the bones, you will be studying the bones like you did in case of the lower extremity. And again, why do I have this, you know, like when I asked you to study the bones, it's because your life becomes much easier. If you study the bones first, when you go into the upper extremity or lower extremity, then when you really look at the muscle attachments or anything else, life is much easier. Or you have to go back and forth, looking for the tubercle, looking for the, what do you call, the deltoid tubercle, all those things you have to look for. On the other hand, if you study the bones first, which are those bones? Clavicle, humerus, radius, ulna, carpals, instead of tarsals, just like the lower extremity, you see, and carpals, and metacarpals, and phalanges, just like you saw in the lower extremity. And then we will go and look at the bones forming the pectoral girdle. Just like when we came in the lower extremity to look at the lower extremity, you have seen that there is a pelvic girdle. Very similar to that, we also have a pectoral girdle. Okay, that pectoral girdle now is formed by, look at the pectoral girdle here, and so the pectoral girdle has two clavicles. This one is taken off, but two clavicles and two scapulae. Pectoral girdle is not just scapula and clavicle. Pectoral girdle is two clavicles and two scapulae. And when people write clavicle and scapula, when it's crossed off on a test, you know, so don't be upset, okay, because it's not right. The pectoral girdle is two scapulae and two clavicles, not just one clavicle, okay. So that is forming your pectoral girdle, okay. The sternum is not in it. The sternum is not in it. You might have seen that in, you know, in the introductory pages, you might see, you know, all these, you know, bones, you know, separately. And so that is your pectoral girdle. And then here you have, what does this do? What does the pectoral girdle do? The two clavicles and the two scapulae, it connects the upper limb to the trunk. It connects the clavicle here, as you look at it, you know, the clavicle here, it connects, you know, the upper limb to the trunk. And then, and what joints are formed by this clavicle? What joints? There is one joint here. And what would you call this joint from looking at it and using the logic that you've already developed? You know, sternoclavicular. Sternoclavicular. No, it's okay. You tried. See, trying is important and you'll know it next time. And so sternoclavicular, because this is, the whole thing is the sternum, eh? I mean, this is the manubrium, the body, the xiphoid, but the whole thing is the sternoclavicular joint. And then you have the acromioclavicular joint. Here is the acromion process. Here is the lateral end of the clavicle. There is a joint there. Now, as any place else, what type, look at the structure here. What type of a joint would you expect the sternoclavicular joint to be? Synovial? Ball and socket. Here is a ball. Yes, here is a ball. See, that is not just plain. So it's a ball and socket. Not a huge, big ball and socket, but it's called a ball and socket. Okay? It's a ball and socket. And so if it's a ball and socket, what type of, and synovial, you know the characteristics by now, and what type of movements, you know, it's not a huge, big ball there, but ball and socket, what movements? It allows lots of movements of the pectoral girdle. The pectoral girdle, whenever you're moving, the pectoral girdle, even when you're doing this type of movement, several movements, you know, when you want to relax, you know, you're doing like that, you know, you're moving the shoulder joint like that. But because by virtue of its attachment to, you know, the acromion process here, you know, so this will also be moving here. Okay, and then we have the acromioclavicular. Acromioclavicular, the acromion process of the scapula. Here's the scapula, and so then the lateral end of the clavicle. Acromioclavicular, there you are right. It is a plain synovial. It's a plain synovial joint. Here it is a plain synovial joint. That plain synovial joint, even though it is plain, it allows little bit more than a gliding. Little bit, you know, more than a, you know, gliding, kind of a little bit of a rotation it will allow. Little bit of a rotation it will allow, even though it is a plain synovial joint. And so then we look at the scapula or the shoulder blade. But we will not accept the shoulder blade part because that's not the medical terminology you're going to be using in your, you know, practice. And so scapula, you're going to be looking at the details, the connecting the clavicle to the humerus. When you look at the scapula here, let's look at the scapula here. Now, as you look at the scapula, okay, here you can see the posterior, you know, aspect. So from the posterior aspect, here you can see, that means here you can see it is connecting. And how is it connecting? How is the scapula connecting, you know, to the humerus or, you know, to the upper limb here? By the shoulder joint. By the shoulder joint. Now, since we have the, you know, the scapula here, look at all the fossae. See, there's a fossa, and then you look at this one here, you know, this view here, the anterior view here, as you look at it here, we also have the fossa here. And so you can see, so you are going to be, when you are looking at these bones, you can see all these fossae for muscle attachments. And but you need, if you know these fossae, subscapular fossa, so what muscle would you expect to fill this fossa here? Subscapularis. Okay, see how easy it becomes. First you know the bone, then you go you know, so here look at it again. So let's look at this one here. This is the spine of the scapula. And so what is that fossa there? Supraspinous. So what muscle do you expect to see here? Supraspinatus muscle. Infraspinatus fossa. Infraspinatus muscle. So that's a steady bones. Look at the fossae. Look at this and whatnot. And then, of course, there will be other muscles, but the major ones that you will see, you know, here. So the point of the shoulder, and that's the other one. It is here, but I think the anterior view gives you in the anatomical position as you look at it here. Okay? The point of the shoulder is this one here. The acromion, you know, process right here. In this country, you know, the old time practices of some of the things have gone, so you don't see tailors, you know, taking measurements or anything these days. But in some other countries and cultures, you still have tailors measuring you for, you know, for the right fitting, not like one size fits all. You know, so there you have, this is from the acromion to the next acromion, is where they are taking the measurements. The tailors take measurements to stitch things for you. And so that is the point of the shoulder. The acromion process is the point of the shoulder. And the other, there are so many other anatomical points that gives you clinical information here. The scapula, when you look at the scapula, it has a spine of the scapula. You can't just say spine because, you know, the ischium has a spine, ischial spine. Okay? So here, if you're saying spine, you have to tell us it's the spine of the scapula or the scapular spine. So we know, you know what bone it is and where you're at. And so spinal scapula is at the level of T3. Some books will say between T3 and T4. What they mean is it is the, you know, the vertebral body between T3 and T4. Okay? So T3 is the root of the scapular spine. See, easy. When you're examining somebody from behind their back, you know, when you see the root of the spinal scapula, instead of having to count the vertebral bodies, you know, top to bottom, bottom to top and whatnot, you feel, you know, the root of the spinal scapula, you know, is at the level of T3. And here, the inferior angle of the scapula at the level of T7. So there are so many of these points that help you. And then we come to the humerus. As you look at the humerus, you would see that it is the bone of both. So here, this is a better one because it also shows all the other, you know, details here. And as you look at the humerus, you can see it has, just like the femur, it has everything like the femur, head, neck. But here, you have the greater tubercle, not the trochanter because it's a little smaller, lesser tubercle. You also have a surgical neck marked here. In case of the femur, I showed you the surgical neck, it was not marked. But here, in the surgical neck is marked, anatomical neck is marked. And so then, of course, when you come down here, and why some of these things are important is because the clinical significance of some of these things here. So when you look at the surgical neck here, surgical neck. There are two clinical significances related to the surgical neck of the humerus. Okay? And so now you've seen where is the surgical neck located. You can see it's below the lesser tubercle and the greater tubercle. And the two surgical significances, One of them is, as you look at it here, you have an anastomosis there. That means you have the anterior and posterior humeral, the anterior and posterior, you know, humeral arteries are, you know, coming around here to anastomose around the, let me take you to that anastomosis right here. The blood vessels are here. Okay, here you can see the anastomos is here. Okay, anterior circumflex and posterior circumflex humeral, anterior circumflex humeral, posterior circumflex humeral, both of them coming from the axillary artery go around, and they are really in here, right around where the surgical neck is. So surgical neck, you know, you may remember from the femur, surgical neck is, you know, where the bone is broken or fractured more often than other parts of the same bone. So that's why the surgical neck is called surgical neck. So around the surgical neck, you have the anterior and posterior circumflex humeral arteries are anastomosing. That is one clinical significance. And the other is the axillary nerve. The axillary nerve is in contact with the surgical neck. The axillary nerve is in contact with, okay. Is in contact with the surgical neck. Okay, surgical neck of the femur. So that is important. So if you have a fracture here, you may then want to think of hemorrhage from either of these two or both these arteries. Number one. Number two, lesion or damage, injury to the axillary nerve. And the axillary nerve, as we go along, we will see that the axillary nerve innervates the deltoid muscle here. The deltoid muscle here. And so there are clinical significances to, you know, some of these, you know, things here. And the other is you have the deltoid tubercle here. Right down here, as you come along here, you have the deltoid tubercle here. That again explains to you what is happening there. What will be happening at the deltoid tubercle? Attachment, distal attachment, insertion of the deltoid muscle. So then you can, when you go to feel the deltoid muscle, you know where to look for it and where to feel for it. And then we have also another clinical significance right over here, and that is, as you look at it here, radial groove. What is the clinical significance of the radial groove? Even though you might not have had a chance to preview, radial groove, when you hear radial groove, what would you expect there? Radial nerve. And so that radial groove, as you look at it here, that's on the posterior aspect. On the posterior aspect, there is a spiral groove on the shaft. See here, radial groove. See right here, this is the posterior aspect. Here is the radial groove, and you can really see that groove on that bone. Okay? And so that radial groove is on the shaft of the femur, of the humerus. Okay, and so as a physician, when you hear about or when you have a patient who has a fracture of the shaft of the humerus, then you may want to think of, you know, damage to the radial nerve. The radial nerve is in contact with the shaft, you know, of the shaft of the humerus. Okay, so that is, you know, one of the things you want to. So when you hear about, and also, just like in the thigh, right along here, and this is the brachium, there is an artery called the brachial artery that you will see. So here, as you look at the artery here you have, you know, this is the anterior view, so radial collateral artery is coming up, but deep artery of the arm. See, that is also lying right against the shaft of the humerus. Right against the shaft of the humerus. And so if there's a fracture, these are the two things you would worry about. You know, shaft of the humerus, fracture of the shaft of the humerus. You know, the profunda, brachii artery, or the deep artery of the arm. Profunda, brachii. Remember profunda femoris? Very similar to that. So deep artery of the arm or profunda brachii artery and the radial nerve are in contact with the shaft of the humerus. So a fracture of the shaft of the humerus, you may want to think of how those two structures, the deep artery of the arm and the radial nerve, could be damaged. So you want to check. Yes, Debbie, you have a question. But we are talking about, yeah, you can think like that if you were talking about, if you're looking at the radius, okay? The bone we had here was the humerus. And the radial groove on the humerus. Then, you know, of course you were using the logic, but the radius was nowhere here, okay? So that's how you could have gotten out of that thought process there. And so here, then we come down to the humerus. Again, remember, there's a whole lot of other things I'm not going over. That means, what is at the proximal end of the humerus, what's at the distal end of the humerus, I'm not going over there. I mean, the coronoid fossa, the olecranon, this, that, all kinds of, the anatomical landmarks are there. So I'm not going there, but I'm looking at more just the clinical instances and significances that are taking place. So here as you look at it, so you will be looking at all these little things here, radial fossa for what and where, and coronoid fossa, all those things you will be looking at, and all the others also here. Now, medial epicondyle, clinical significance. So if you have, so now you've come down from the shaft to the medial epicondyle here. So, and that middle epicondyle, if there is a fracture, you know, of the middle epicondyle, what nerve or what structure would you have, you know, in close opposition there? Medial epicondyle. This is this part here, medial epicondyle. What do you know about this part from before coming to this classroom? Funny bone. Funny bone is the medial epicondyle, is the funny bone, but no, you know, it's not the bone, but the bone you hit, but the nerve that is giving you that funny feeling there is the ulnar nerve, So fracture of the medial epicondyle, the clinical significance is damage to the ulnar nerve, okay? And so then we have come down, we've done this part, and then suppose you have a, you know, fracture here at the distal end of the humerus, okay? Distal end of the humerus, that it can be right over here in the middle, distal end of the humerus. People may not tell you in an examination, you know, the half an inch lateral to this, you know, 0.5 centimeter from here, they will not say that. There is a distal end of the humerus, fracture of the distal end of the humerus. Which of the following structures should you pay more attention to, or which of the following structures do you expect to be damaged? That is how somebody will ask the question, okay? And so if that is the case, fracture of the distal end of the humerus, and what would you expect to see distal end of the humerus? Okay, let's go here, and you can see. What do you see here? This is the distal end of the humerus. What do you see there? Brachial artery is right here. Distal end of the humerus, brachial artery is there, okay? And then there's also nerves there, okay? As we come to look at the nerves here, let's go and look at, okay, this nerve here, that is the, all right, and right, okay, here. Okay. this is covering up. I would like something here. Okay. The median nerve is right in that part, okay? Median nerve passes as you look at the brachial plexus here. I'm hoping to get to the brachial plexus today. And so here, the median nerve that is coming from the brachial plexus is passing right in front, right in the middle of the elbow, right here. Right in the middle of the elbow, median nerve is passing there. You've seen the artery, and so then the median nerve is also passing there. So the fracture of the distal end of the humerus can affect the brachial artery, that means the distal part of the brachial artery, and the median nerve, and the median nerve, this one here, the median nerve, as you know, it comes down. I have a diagram here because the nerves, I have put the nerves, you know, someplace, okay. So here, distribution, medial, okay. So here I have the median nerve, because you are not familiar with some of these nerves here, okay. That's why I'm taking you here. I have the coloring packet here. I'm not going to color here, but I have the coloring packet. I know there will be lots left here today. Since you are all sitting there very comfortably, I think, okay, so there. Okay, here. Now, here, pass it there, please. Okay, there's one or two coming that way. Okay. Now, here, that has the first diagram there. You can see the picture there. Here. Here. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, okay, good. Okay. Oh, you have the same diagram. So, yeah, if you have netter, it's a good idea to have netter, you know, to have netter open. Here. One more, Dudley. Here. Yeah, here. Shandi, you see? Okay, there you have for... Shandi means peace, you know that. All of you. Shandi, Om Shandi. Yeah. Okay, now we have to laugh in between, eh? That's why. I'm not trying to convert you or anything. And so, here. Sure. Please pass it. Rory, did you get one? No? Sarah? Here. There. Okay, now I'll pass this way so anybody who doesn't have it. Yeah, so you can see where the median nerve is on its way. Chad, okay. Anybody else? Yeah. So the first diagram, why are you all laughing? Good. The first diagram on the left there, and so this one shows you the median nerve, you see? And so you can really see how and where it's coming down. See, here it is. Here is the median nerve in green color. I'm going to put the median nerve here. Median. It's not medial, it's N. Median nerve coming down. You see here? It's going all the way into the palm, but it's coming down here. So this part. So if there's a fracture here at the distal end of the humerus, the median nerve can be affected. And then you've seen it goes into the palm. That means it can affect a number of the muscles in the palm. And so you may see some problems in the palm. You see how beautiful it becomes when you study, when you figure it out, when you apply this, you know, it's going to really help you a long way, you know, for making the diagnosis, okay? And joints formed by the humerus are two major joints like your elbow and the shoulder. that we need to spend time there, you know, to look at the, what you call the shoulder joint and the elbow joint. And so as when we look at the parts or the areas of, you know, the upper extremity, you've seen one of them is the shoulder. So when you look at the shoulder, you have inferior to the shoulder, the part that's inferior to the shoulder joint here is the axilla, what we know as the armpit, the armpit. And so, but we're going to refer to it as very nicely refined terminology, axilla, not the armpit, okay? And so the, that's how axilla comes here. I mean, so if you wonder, what is this? We're talking about the upper extremity and all of a sudden she's jumping to the axilla. Axilla is the lower part, inferior part of the shoulder joint there. And this axilla, when you look at it, it has a scapular region and a pectoral region. A scapular region and a pectoral region. That is how mammary gland will come here also. And so from where does this gland comes? Because the pectoral part of the axilla, you know, has the mammary gland. So we will, as we go along, we will do, you know, the axilla, and then we will come to the mammary gland sometime. May not be today if I have, if we get there, we'll get there. If not, we'll do it in a some other time. First, let us do the axilla, okay? And so as we go to do the axilla here, and you can see its location. Now, axilla, where would you say is axilla located? What is the location of the axilla? What's the location of the axilla? What would you say is the location of the axilla? because I somewhat, you know, used this outline for something, so I had to wipe something off of it. Okay, so here, the location, you know, of the axilla is between the thorax and the upper end of the upper extremity, upper end of the upper extremity and the thorax. It's not chest anymore, it's thorax. It's not armpit anymore, it's thorax. You know, so, you know, it's between the thorax and it's between the thorax and the upper end of the arm. And so the shape, when you look at it, is pyramidal in shape. It's pyramidal in shape, okay? And so I have two paper models. I think she's in fourth year now. A fourth year student made this and gave this to me. And so this is a beautiful axilla, and she's labeled it. And I'd like you to take a look at it, and I'd like to hold on to it. And so here, and this I snatched from some place when I went for a wedding. They gave a piece of wedding cake in this, you know, inside. So I thought, oh, this is a good axilla. So, I mean, they gave it. So I decided I will bring it here. So their address and phone number is here, but they're married people. And so, don't get ideas. And so there. So that's the, that's the axilla. That's how I got these two axillae. And so when you look at those two axillae, what do you see there? You can really see, you know, what is called your, where is this air? Okay, so here, the axilla there is pyramidal in shape. So what, you know, pyramidal in shape, let me, you know, let me draw this here. Pyramidal in shape, how can the axilla be? Because the axilla is, okay, good. The skeleton comes so handy, so you don't have to, one of you don't have to stand up here. And in case you're sweating, and so right over here. So here, see? As you look at it, because this is all with the, you know, ligaments. And so here, right, right, as you look at it. So the, as the arm is sitting like that, when we talk about the axilla, it is really going right into the root of the neck. It's going right into the root of the neck. Here like that, this is the base of it. Where you can put your fist here, that's the base of it. Okay? And then it's coming into the room. Please pass it. Please pass it. So others can see. Please pass it. Yeah. And so it comes. So its base is here, where you can feel base, skin, superficial fascia, you know, some subcutaneous tissue, whatever, you know. So axillary fascia. So that is the base here, axillary fascia, skin. There's no muscle in the base here, okay? It's no muscle, but only that part. And then, so this is a narrow interval, the apex. Because, you know, it is a pyramid, that means it has an apex. So here you are seeing the base of the axilla is here, and then if you go like that, right from here like that, so this will be, in the neck will be the apex. And so here, when you look at it here, right over here, let's draw this one here. So here, so it has an apex, okay, and then it has, so here, a base, a medial wall, a lateral wall, and it has an anterior wall and a posterior wall. So it has an anterior wall and a posterior wall. So the paper model that is coming your way, you can see that it has an apex. The apex is here in the root of the neck, right over here, the apex. The base is right here. So that is the interval. That is the interval there. And then you have a medial wall. Medial wall, not here, here, high up here. Medial wall and lateral wall, you know, apex and base. So we will look at those here. And as you look at the apex, is that this narrow, you know, interval is directed toward the root of the neck, as you said. But what is forming it? As you look at it here, you can see there is, so here, 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 this one should show, okay, this one should show. Here you have the clavicle, part of the clavicle, and as you see here, okay, this is, you know, the base is here, here, not up here, base is here, and the clavicle, and look at it here, here you also have the first rib, and the clavicle posteriorly, what would you have? The upper part of the scapula posteriorly. So that is what, you know, you would have, you know, the apex is formed like that. So the bony parts uniting together here is the first rib and part of the, you know, the clavicle, and also the upper border of the, of your scapula posteriorly is your apex. You know, and also please pass the thing around, you know, so they can also see. And then anterior wall. Anterior wall is easy. Anterior wall is easy here. Right? Anterior wall is right over here. There are three muscles there. And little bit of the clavicle there. So here look at the anterior wall. Anterior wall here, that's how pec major, pec minor, and subclavius come here. See, anterior wall, that means here is the, you know, the apex is right there. Anterior wall formed by is part of your pec major, part of your pec minor, and also the little muscle here, the subclavius, and little bit of this part of your, you know, clavicle. So that is your, you know, anterior wall. And so this is all clavi, pectoral fascia also. You have deep fascia, clavi, pectoral fascia. So that fascia is right over here, the deep fascia that you would find here. You know, from the covering the clavicle and, you know, the pectoral muscle here, clavi, pectoral fascia. Clavi pectoral fascia is also there. This is, you know, just for clavi pectoral fascia also, you know, is there. So that's the anterior wall. Then the posterior wall. Posterior wall right deep to the posterior wall, as you come and look at it here, you can see the posterior wall of the axilla. What do you have in the posterior wall of the axilla? Subscapularis muscle. You've seen the scapular fossa. So here you have the subscapularis muscle. Teres major muscle. You can't see that teres major, and look at it here. They would have labeled the teres major there. Teres major, the latissimus dorsi, and of course the scapula. So here, here you have teres major, right over here. See, subscapular is this right here. See here, in the scapular fossa, subscapular fossa. And then here you have next to it, right over here, teres major muscle. Then latissimus dorsi. Latissimus dorsi is right over here. It's the big muscle. You can feel it on its way. It is forming part of, So when you do the overhead, like that, when you do that overhead, for swimming, when you are doing that, or, chopping wood, doing any of these things, yeah, you can do the exercise also and just feel relaxed. Yeah, so let's have the Jigong here going, and so right there, so that is the posterior wall. That's the posterior wall. Again, three muscles, isn't it? Subscapularis, teres major, latissimus dorsi, and what else is there, for the posterior wall? Scapula, the bone, scapula. This part of the scapula. That's the posterior wall. And then we go medial wall. Medial wall is here, medial wall, serratus anterior muscle. Serratus, for some of you who have seen this term only for the first time, serratus anterior muscle. That tells you a lot. Serratus anterior muscle. What does that tell you? Serratus anterior muscle. What do you understand? It's a serrated muscle. Yeah, that's like, you remember the edge of the knife. When you want to cut something hard, you use the serratus, the serrated knife, like the edge. So like that muscle there, serratus anterior muscle, this is the origin of the serratus anterior muscle. All along here, this red things that you see here, serratus anterior. And you can see on some people, most probably Jeff Thomas, you can see, if he takes his, t-shirt off, you can see his serratus anterior very nicely, because he's likely to do it. That's why, I took his name. And so here, that is serratus anterior muscle. And why do you call serratus anterior? There is also a serratus posterior later on when we come. But right now, for the time being, serratus anterior muscle. And since the serratus anterior muscle are, here, what muscle do you expect to see here? This is what you call, these are what, the ribs are what? Costal, pertaining. So what muscles would you have here? Intercostal muscles. That means the first four ribs, the 1, 2, 3, 4 ribs, and the intercostal muscles in this area. That means, I'm showing it to you, but more in the axilla there. And the first four ribs, intercostal muscles, and serratus anterior muscle. Those are forming the medial wall. The medial wall, at the axilla. And the lateral wall. The lateral wall, I kind of have to disagree a little bit with the textbook. The textbook says the lateral wall is only the intertubercular groove of the humerus. That is hard for me to swallow. Okay, and so I'm going to take you through what I believe should be there. And so here, according to the textbook, if you study here, this is the intertubercular groove. This groove here that accommodates the biceps tendon, which we will study later. And so they're saying the lateral wall is only this intertubercular groove. No. According to my preparation and whatever I believe in, So here we have, you know, coracobrachialis muscle. It's on the humerus. It's on the humerus. Okay, coracobrachialis muscle and part of the biceps brachii. These are all parts of, okay, biceps brachii muscle, upper end of the humerus. Upper end of the humerus. That is what I would take as the lateral wall, okay? And so on the upper end of the humerus is where you have the intertubercular groove. So it's not just the intertubercular groove, okay? So that's it. Anterior wall, posterior wall, medial wall, lateral wall, base, apex. Now when we have a space like that, they also have contents. That is where, you know, your preparation, that means that you are spending time and coming here to look for are the contents here. Okay, when you look at the contents here, we have, like any place else as you go, we have arteries, we have veins, and we have the nerves. Okay, so here we have the, because this is the axilla, deep arteries take the name of the regions in which they travel. So what artery would you expect to see here as the contents of the axilla? Axillary artery, axillary artery. And so as you look at the axillary artery, you would see here, it is the continuation of what? Here you have, you know, the subclavian arteries here, so that you can see the subclavian, you know, is right here. Subclavian is coming right here. And so continuation of the subclavian artery, when it comes in the axilla, right over here, you can barely see, here is the clavicle, and here was the subclavian, and then, you know, at the lower border of the first rib, if you need to know that, here is the axillary artery, it becomes the axillary artery here. Axillary artery, axillary vein, and the brachial plexus of nerves. Those are the contents. Those are the contents, okay? Axillary artery, axillary vein, and, you know, the brachial plexus of nerves. Okay, so let's go and look at the axillary artery. So here, we have the axillary artery. Now you've seen the, from where the axillary artery is coming. Here is the part of the clavicle. Here is the other part of the clavicle that has been cut off. Okay, here you have the neck and manubrium, sternum and everything. So here, right from here on, this line here comes right up to there, you have the axillary artery. Now, I don't expect you to know all the branches of the axillary artery, but the important branches you need to know. Okay, and also even when I don't expect you to, or Dr. Lau doesn't expect you to know all the branches, but look at the axillary artery. You can see it has a branch coming down here and going to the intercostal spaces, intercostal, you know, muscles and all that. So have the awareness that the branches that are coming down from the axillary artery, you can see it is coming and giving blood supply to the structures in the region in which it is traveling. Okay? And then they are also named according to what they are supplying. As you look at it, superior thoracic artery. So, or supreme thoracic artery here. So it is coming in the upper part of the thorax and the anterior part is supplying blood. Then you come to the second part here, thoracoacromial. Thoracoacromial is a small trunk, a trunk here. So that means it gives branches to the thoracic region, it gives branches to the region of the acromion process. You see here, thoracoacromial. Thoracoacromial artery, or trunk is the better use because it is branching like that. It's going to the deltoid region. So there is a, you know, a small trunk coming out and giving several branches. That's coming, you know, from below, deep to the pec minor, muscle, the pec minor muscle. Because the pec minor muscle sitting here, it divides it. And then it comes right below here, the third part or the lower part here, the lateral thoracic artery. That's important. The lateral thoracic artery is also called as the lateral thoracic artery is also known as the external mammary. Is also known as the external mammary. Lateral thoracic artery, a branch of the axillary artery, is also known as the external mammary. So where do you think it will be also supplying blood to, other than some of the structures in the thorax? The mammary gland. So the lateral thoracic artery, which is a branch of the axillary artery, supplies blood to the mammary gland. As a result, the lateral thoracic artery is, you know, considered to be larger in females. The lateral thoracic artery is larger in females because of its supply to the mammary gland, So external mammary or lateral thoracic artery that is coming from the axillary artery here is supplying blood to the mammary gland, to the lateral part of the mammary gland right here. So that clinically you need to know that. That means there will also be a lateral, you know, so here you have the mammary gland. So here you can see how it is easy for, you know, the lateral thoracic artery to supply blood, you know, to the mammary gland. And that is the, this one actually shows its branches coming here. See the lateral thoracic, you can see the branches coming to the mammary gland. And so that is why, you know, that is important. And then, you know, here you also have the third part right here. Let's go back here. Third part of the subclavian here. Look at the subclavian third part. Subscapular artery. So subscapular artery, which wall of the axilla do you think the subscapular artery will supply?
Posterior,
because yes, the subscapularis muscle. Subscapularis muscle. See, logic helps a lot, and so, and the other thing why we look at, and also it's reasonably big. The subscapular artery gives a circumflex branch that I'll pick up there, but see that it's a part of that and it's going to participate in the anastomosis. And then it also continues on a thoracodorsal artery. Thoracodorsal. Where, what areas will it be supplying blood to? Thoracodorsal goes to the dorsum of the thorax. So it's thorax but dorsum. Okay, that means the muscle that is in the dorsum here. There are six layers of muscles in the back. But we have seen one huge big muscle when you are swimming. Latissimus dorsi. And so then you can see how that is, you know, getting blood supply from here. Thoracodorsal artery, you know, so that is the branches of, and then from the third part here, when you see some place, I don't think anybody's going to ask you first part, second part, third part of the axillary artery, but if you need to know the first part, second part, third part, what is the basis of calling the axillary artery the first, second, and the third part? The pec minor muscle sitting right in front. So if the pec minor muscle has attachment here, so it is coming down, it has attachment to the ribs, and so here is the pec minor muscle. So behind or deep to the pec minor muscle is some of these arteries taking origin, okay?
then below the pec minor is where you have the lateral thoracic, and this one here, the subscapula. And the other two, from the lower part here, you've seen the anterior and posterior, you know, the circumflex humeral. Anterior and posterior, they are important. Important because of the anastomosis. Because of the anastomosis there. So now you've seen the branches of the axillary artery, that means the axillary artery and its branches. Anastomosis around the scapula. I think now is the time to look at the anastomosis around the scapula, you know, also. Yeah. Three hands went up. 1, 2, 3. Yeah. Yeah, one at a time. Yeah. Why it is what? Why it is broken into three parts? Because of a muscle sitting in front. Okay, that muscle is, let me take you to that muscle right here. Let's look at this one here. See this one here? So here, you can see the axillary artery. Okay, here. So here you can see the axillary artery is coming down like that. And you can see the pec minor muscle. The pec minor has attachment to the ribs here. It also has attachment to the coracoid process. So with that muscle in front, for easy understanding of the branches, people started calling, dividing the axillary artery in two. The first part is right between the first rib and the medial border of the pec minor, and the second part is behind or posterior to the pec minor. The third part is below. Below means, you know, below here, you know, its lower border, and right up to the lower border of the teres major muscle. So that is why, because of that muscle sitting there, it is divided. No, there was a hand up there and there. What was the hand there for? Somebody, yeah. Jesse, yeah. Oh, that's the same question. No, hers next and then yours. Yeah. What was your question? Somebody had a hand up there. No? Okay.
What was the first part
is superior or supreme thoracic.
And that's the name of the branch.
It's the name of the branch. Yeah, name of the branch. That's what you asked me, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Supreme or superior thoracic. Some books will refer to it as, you know, supreme, others will say superior thoracic. Yeah. Diane. Yeah.
Take a break first.
Yes. Before the axilla, the anastomosis around the axilla. Yeah, it's kind of occurred to me. Then I thought, what announcement? Oh, wait, because in case I forget. Announcement of the sign-up sheets. I'm going to put up the sign-up sheet before Thursday. That means today, tomorrow, somewhere there. On the wall next to room 16. Room 16, as you enter the room 16, before you enter, there's a little bulletin board on the left wall. Next to the bulletin board, I'll put three sheets. You know, so I like, how do I sign up? I have the time written like this, 8 to 8:10, and about 4 or 5 places, 8 to 8:10, 8 to 8 to 10. And then 8:10 to 8:20 below, you know, 4 or 5, and then like that, right up to 8:50. That is for the first group of students to sign up. That means you sign on one line, you and your partner, the two names on one line with your partner's name. So the two partners. So if Vaishali and Ying are going to be partners, these two names will be on that, you know, line there. And I like people to fill up from the top down. Okay, not at the bottom. What happens is, toward the end of the hour, things will get crowded. And do not expect, we are human beings, do not expect us to really take the time with you. If there is no time, I'll say just go. Okay, give me the answer. I may say that. But if there is time, it is different. 5 minutes for 5 questions. What you will do is, you will pick up 6 cards, you look at it, and you can drop the one you don't want to do. The least, the one you know least. you will drop it face down. So you, the partner doesn't see. Maybe the partner knows that question well. Okay, so give the partner a chance. So that means you look at the question for yourself and then you just put one down. You know, so there will be a pile of cards, you know, that will be spread out. So you just, eeny, meeny, miny, mo. And so you take, you know, six of them and drop one. And that is how it goes. And you cannot have 20 minutes or 10 minutes, 5 minutes for 5 questions. So read the question and its number and do exactly what the question asks you to do. Demonstrate the point of the shoulder. Then you say, okay, so here, demonstrate the point of the shoulder. Question number 1. Here is the point of the shoulder. It is indicated by, or this is the acromion process which forms the point of the shoulder. It doesn't take 5 minutes. Okay, and so here, you know, is the medial epicondyle, the lateral epicondyle of the humerus. Here's the medial epicondyle. So I expect the cubital nodes, lymph nodes to be here. This is, you know, just an example. So if you have to demonstrate the cubital lymph nodes, that's how you demonstrate the cubital lymph nodes. That means, you know, you can be asked the popliteal or the inguinal nodes, or the pulses, you know, any of these things, and you just go and do it. And but people take time and say, cubital lymph nodes, cubital lymph nodes, cubital lymph nodes. Meanwhile, I'm waiting, I'm wondering what's going on. Just show me the cubital lymph nodes. Cubital lymph nodes, cubital lymph. Is it here? And then my look will be like that. I don't know. Why are you asking me? Just give me the answer. And so, so that's the charade. And so what I mean is, please come prepared, and so that you can do it. But you have the choice of dropping one. And so, when you know something, you just tell us. You just tell us as you know it. Okay? And that's all. Okay. Let's take a break. Let's go. Okay. Yeah. So yeah. Okay, you guys, let's go and look at the anastomosis around the scapula, and then we'll get to more serious things. Very interesting. You are here for an important point that we are going to make afterwards. So here, anastomosis around the scapula. What are the few important things about it? Number one, this anastomosis around the scapula is between the branches of the subclavian artery and the axillary artery. So the two main arteries that you have here, subclavian continuing on as the axillary. And let me, before I go to that, let me reiterate that part one more time, because when I said it, I saw the look on somebody's face. And so when I see such looks, I know what it means. So here, that is the anastomosis here. Okay? And so as you look at it here, you can see these two are branches, anterior posterior, circumflex humerals are branches of the axillary here. Okay? And this one, the subscapular gives a circumflex scapula. So this is also coming from the axillary artery. And then there are two others that are coming from the dorsal scapula, this one. See, dorsal scapula is coming from the subclavian. Okay, and then here you have the suprascapular, that is, you know, also coming from a branch of the subclavian. So you have arteries coming from both the subclavian and the axillary. Subclavian and the axillary. Why is that important for you to know? As you look at this one, now you will see here are the four branches as you see here. Okay. Here you can see that posterior circumflex humeral. Here, okay? And then you have the circumflex scapula, two. And then you have dorsal scapula. Then you have the suprascapula. Now, look at the extensive anastomosis around, you know, the scapula. That means on the anterior and the posterior parts of the scapula as you see it. And what do you see on this diagram and, you know, here on that diagram? What do you see here? It's not, the muscles have been stripped off to show you the anastomosing here, okay, among several branches here. But you have the supraspinatus, infraspinatus, and so you have the teres major and the teres minor. And so there are so many muscles. That means the posterior surface and the anterior surface of the surfaces of the scapula are covered with muscle fibers. So that means this anastomosis that is here, and as you have seen, circumflex scapula, where is the posterior circumflex humeral? Right here, going like that. And so here you have, you know, another one coming right over here. Here you have the deep branch, that means the dorsal scapular, you know, coming here, and suprascapular coming here. So all these anastomosing, first of all, to supply muscles on both sides of the scapula. So muscles on both sides of the scapula receive, you know, blood supply from anastomosis around the scapula. Number one. Number two, yes.
I think I keep missing one branch.
Three is listed in your textbook, but there's a fourth one. The textbook has it in the diagram, but they haven't included. The four branches that are there, dorsal scapular, see here this one, dorsal scapular, that's the deep branch of the transverse cervical artery. Dorsal scapula, okay?
And that comes from the subclavian?
Yeah, it comes from the subclavian. And then here we have suprascapula. That's also from the subclavian. Okay? And then here we have the circumflex scapula. That comes from the axillary. And then here you have the posterior circumflex. That comes from the axillary. Okay? Now, Jesse. Posterior circumflex brachial or humeral? You can use either, but usually I would go with humeral because that comes into my mind easily, humeral. Posterior circumflex humeral. Okay? Because it's in the brachium. So if you say posterior circumflex brachial, it should be grammatically, politically correct. Okay? It should be correct also. Alright? Now, the other important point about this is, first it was supplying blood to all the muscles on both surfaces of the scapula. Number two, if there is a ligation, blockage to in between these two arteries, that means here, you know, the right here, okay, then these anastomoses here will ensure blood supply to some of the structures right here. Okay, and you can have a blockage, you can have something, so if somebody has to ligate something here on the axillary artery, see, blood from the subclavian is going to come through these anastomosing arteries to some of the structures below. So that also helps, you know, for supplying blood, ensuring blood supply to the structures below, you know, this area here. And just like any other place, you know, because they usually, any anastomosis supplying to the structures around there and also ensuring blood supply to the structures below, you know, that anastomosis in case of blockage or, you know, something like that. So that is why we look at, you know, the anastomosis around the scapula. And then that I am done with the axillary artery, that brings me to the axillary vein. Okay, so that is not the first word. That brings me to the axillary vein. Okay, so when we look at the axillary vein, there's some little important things about the axillary vein. Okay, that important thing about the axillary vein is, this is the fourth one, is that how is it formed and where is it, and look at the axillary vein nearer. Really doesn't give a good diagram of the axillary vein, but Grant's atlas, Gray's atlas, Gray's anatomy of atlas. And this is from Grant's or from your textbook. Mind you have noticed by now that your textbook and Grant's, they have almost the same kind of diagrams, because Moore had extensive privilege to borrow from Grant's. And so here you can see, this is from Grant's, as I said. You can see the axillary vein. The axillary vein is traveling. Here is the axillary artery. Here is the axillary, axillary vein and axillary artery there. And so here you can see even the, or what do you call, even the, what are these bulges? What are these bulges? Valves. Okay, good. And how is it formed? How is the axillary vein formed? What veins unite to form the axillary vein? Brachial veins. Brachial veins and basilic. And basilic. Okay? Brachial vein and basilic. So here you have the vena cavitandi of the brachial artery, those two brachial veins. You see this one, brachial veins here, brachial veins. And then here you have the basilic vein. What is interesting about the basilic vein is that the basilic and cephalic veins are superficial veins. Basilic and cephalic are superficial veins. You can see the cephalic here, superficial. Okay? Here is the cephalic, superficial. Traveling, cephalic, toward the head, cephalic. Basilic, right here. So, the basilic vein and the brachial veins unite about mid-arm, right here, in the brachium. Middle of the brachium, about here. So what happens is about here. The superficial vein, which is the basilic vein, it pierces the deep fascia here. Goes in deep, looking for the brachial veins. And they unite and form. That is what is appropriate and accurate information. You may find it many other ways, many other places, and that's not going to be acceptable for Becky or I. Okay? And so what we will accept is that the axillary vein is formed by the union of the basilic vein, which is a superficial vein, and the brachial veins. Okay? And so, yes, what's your question? Quick, because I have to go to the brachial plexus, yeah. I repeated again. Okay, good. So, repeating helps, eh? Okay, I'll keep repeating myself. Sometimes people complain about my repeating, that's why I don't do a whole lot of repeating. Okay, now I have permission, I'll do it. And so in other words, if you have a question on a board exam, where it says, the axillary vein is formed by the union of a superficial vein and some deep veins. Is that true or false? True. Because it's unlike what normally should happen, isn't it? That's why I'm pointing it out. That's why, you know, when you're hit with such a question, you should be able to do it. So the axillary vein then becomes what? I'm not going to answer it. You answer it. Subclavian. But yeah, exactly. Thank you. So subclavian vein. Okay. So now I'm done with what is called your the axillary vein, axillary artery, everything. The next content of the axilla is your brachial plexus of nerves. Brachial plexus of nerves is where I really go take you through a nerve plexus. The reason is because this is where you can really see it. Because if I take you through lumbar plexus, you're not going to be able to see the lumbar plexus or the sacral plexus until the second quarter. So this quarter, you know, I do the brachial plexus with you is because we can see it, because after the midterms and everything, you will be going into the upper extremity. When you go into the upper extremity, first thing you will do is the axilla. When you do the axilla, you will be looking for the contents of the axilla. And as you look at the contents of the axilla, you will see that you have the brachial plexus. So we consider, and why is the brachial plexus important? Why is the brachial plexus important? Yeah, other than, you know, it is a nerve plexus. Other than that, why do you think it is important compared to, say, the deep fibular nerve or something like that? Why is this more important? Because of all the nerves that it is supplying to the upper extremity. Because this is, we need the hand, you know, for writing, for doing anything, driving. Even if you're in a wheelchair, you need, you know, your hands. You know, this is the organ of manual, you know, labor, action, anything. Okay, you can sit in a wheelchair and go, but this we need. So hand is very important, more so than, you know, the lower extremity. So, and all the muscles in the upper extremity, receive, you know, innervations from nerves, from the brachial plexus of nerves, And this brachial plexus of nerves, you know, is in between the muscles as it's coming out. It's coming out from the root of the neck, okay? And when it comes out from the root of the neck, we consider the brachial plexus in five stages. Okay. So as you look at it here, okay, I'm going to have the page like that. In five stages. Okay. So what is a good color? Black here. Everybody can see. So when you look at the spinal cord, I haven't drawn the cross-section of the spinal cord with you, so here, let me draw that quickly here. So this is the spinal cord, and so the top part here, I'm going to have a cross-section of the spinal cord here. Okay, so you know when I'm talking about, okay, that is the spinal cord cross-section. This is the other part of the spinal cord that's just, you know, staying as cylindrical as it should stay. And so then here is the gray matter. Here is the white matter on the outside. So here is a dorsal root coming out, and dorsal root ganglion. And then here is a ventral root. Ventral root, okay, is coming out. And these two roots, dorsal and ventral, they unite and they form. What do they form? This here, what is it formed here? A spinal nerve. Exactly, a spinal nerve. So here, it has formed a spinal nerve. This is a spinal nerve. Okay, now that spinal nerve divides, into a dorsal and a ventral primary ramus. Now, so this is at the level of C5. Say this is at the level of C5. So like this, we have from C6, C7, C8, and T1. So here, so this ventral primary ramus of C5 is coming out like that. Very similar to that. I'm not going to do the same in every place here. I'm just going to have the ventral primary ramus of C6 here. Ventral primary ramus, okay? From C7 here, C8 here, T1 here. Now these are all ventral primary rami plural. Now we said we are going to discuss this in 5 stages. So the roots. So here you have C5, ventral primary ramus, okay? And dorsal is going that way. This is the ventral primary ramus, ventral. And then, so the roots, and then these roots unite. So here I'm going to unite these roots, 5 and 6 united and formed what is called a trunk. That trunk is what we call the upper trunk. So this is C7, ventral primary ramus, is a solo person, like a road elephant is going here. Doesn't like to talk to anyone, doesn't like to study with anyone, likes to go by itself, because it's a waste of time, and that one thinks. And so here, then you have, hey, you know, I used to think like that when I was a graduate student, I will not study with people, I thought I'm wasting my time. And now I just think the opposite. Studying in groups really helps. Okay? So I was talking about myself. And so here you have C8 and T1. They are more social. They come together and they form the lower or the inferior trunk. This one is the middle trunk. Now you've seen the roots and the trunks. So you've seen there are 3 trunks right here as you look at it here. See here, you have the superior trunk, middle trunk and the inferior trunk. So here you can see how these trunks are formed. And then from there, let's go, the trunks now divide. The trunks go and divide. And so let me have anterior division, posterior division. Anterior division, posterior division. Anterior division, posterior division. Here, now this one, this is posterior division, this is anterior division. A, anterior division, P, posterior division, this is A. Anterior division, this is P, posterior division, this is A, anterior division, this is P, posterior division. So, roots, trunks, divisions. Why am I going over these divisions? The divisions are important. This is how divisions help you. The anterior division, the nerves coming from the anterior division supplies all the muscles in the flexor compartment of the upper extremity. The nerves coming from the posterior division supply all the muscles in the extensor compartment of the upper extremity. Okay, so now we have those divisions here. Here are the divisions here. You can see the anterior division, posterior division, the anterior division, posterior division. Okay, anterior division, posterior division, posterior division, anterior division. So you have that, and you have in the diagram here, and then the nerve is not happy there. The nerve goes and decides in purple color, it decides to unite all the posterior divisions like to be together. Like people who came from the same town, they like to look for people from who have come from the same town, and they like to sit and study together because they can talk about Midwest and how the fall season differs in Midwest from the Seattle, you know, fall season and things like that. And so here, at the posterior, all the posterior divisions united, Now, Sean, look at the diagram I'm doing here. Okay, and so here, then it formed a posterior cord. All the posterior divisions united and formed a posterior cord. Okay, and then there's these two anterior divisions, this one and this one together. They came together, they formed a cord, the lateral cord, the lateral cord. Okay, and then from this one, the anterior division from C8 and T1, that means from the lower trunk, that continues by itself. Okay, so that is the medial cord. Okay, posterior cord, lateral cord, medial cord. So now you see how the cords are. So this quarter, you will not see the roots, you will not see the trunks, you will not see the divisions. This quarter, you will see the cords, these three cords and the nerves. That means this quarter, this is what you will see. You will see the lateral cord, posterior cord, medial cord. These three cords, that means from about here down and all these terminal branches is what you will see. You will not see the roots and the trunks and the divisions because that's in the neck and below, deep to the axilla. I mean, deep to the clavicle, okay? And so that's why you don't see it. But you will see it in the third quarter. When you take the clavicle off, when you do this part, you will see it, okay, at the time. And now, these cords, the nerves are given out from these cords. You see how easy it becomes when you go slowly and look at it. From the now you also see that why some of these nerves, as we are going to draw it, that they have sensory fibers, motor fibers, they're coming from C5. As you look at the branches, you will see that, okay? Here, from the lateral cord, here you have a nerve called, okay, musculocutaneous nerve. There's one here called the lateral pectoral nerve. Lateral pectoral nerve. Then, where do you think it will go? Lateral pectoral. Just say some logical thing. Pectoral muscles, you see? Pectoral muscles, okay. And then musculocutaneous. It will go to the skin and muscles, okay, musculocutaneous. Then it gives the median nerve. So it has a lateral root coming from someplace. We will get there. And then the posterior cord. Now you see in the posterior cord has fibers from everywhere. C5, C6, C7, C8 and T1. From the posterior cord, here you have an axillary nerve. Here is the axillary nerve is going to go. I'm going to keep it here, but it goes like that. The axillary nerve, it axillary nerve goes to which muscle? Which we discussed a little later, little earlier. Which muscle? Axillary nerve. Deltoid. And also there is another nerve, a huge big nerve called the radial nerve, also coming from the posterior cord. As you look at the posterior cord here, you have the radial nerve. Radial nerve, as you look at it here, radial nerve goes in the posterior compartment, posterior division, posterior compartment. So where is the radial nerve going? To what structures? Extensor muscles, C5, 6, 7, 8, and T1, okay? So this is the radial nerve, C5, 6, 7, 8, and T1. And then from the posterior cord, you also have three other nerves coming out here. There's one here. I'm going to bring it out this far so I can write on it. And then there's another one coming down here. It's a little longer. Then there's another one coming from here. Stays here like that, okay? So this one is upper. This one is upper. And this one is lower. Subscapular. Upper and lower subscapular nerves. Upper and lower subscapular nerves. So you can easily figure out where they are going. And then this is what we call this one. It's a long one. Thoracodorsal. Thoracodorsal. Where do you think the thoracodorsal nerve will go? You've seen the thoracodorsal artery. Thoracodorsal nerve. Latissimus dorsi. Latissimus dorsi. Latissimus dorsi. Thoracodorsal will go to the latissimus dorsi. Alright? 5, 6, 7, 8. And so, but I'm not going to the spinal roots right now. And so that is the lateral cord, the posterior cord, and then the medial cord is remaining. Let's take a different color for the medial cord because green color I haven't used. Medial cord gives. Here, medial cord comes, gives the lateral root of the median nerve. The lateral root of the median nerve. Okay? Oh, I should not take it here. I should take it here. Okay? So it goes, where is the, yeah, that is the median nerve, the median root. Oh, well, I took it to the right place. Okay, so here. I took it to the right place, yeah, right place here. So here you have the median nerve, right here. So the median nerve is coming from two cords, the lateral cord and the medial cord. So it will have fibers from all over, just like the radial nerve. Median nerve, because it's coming a long way, all along here, comes into the palm. You've seen that it can be damaged here, the median nerve, remember? The same median nerve comes into the palm there. And so here you can see that. Here you can see the median nerve. C5, 6, 7, 8 and T1, median nerve. It's lateral root, it's medial root, coming right here, median nerve. Radial nerve, axillary, yeah, I have gone over, muscular cutaneous, lateral pectoral, and then upper and lower subscapular, and you know, what you call the thoracodorsal, right here. And then here I'm left with the medial cord that gives rise to your long awaited ulnar nerve. So here is coming from the medial cord, you have the ulnar nerve. Ulnar nerve, the spinal roots that I will accept is C8 and T1. C8 and T1. So this is the ulnar nerve. Ulnar nerve, okay?
Dr. Thomas?
Yeah.
Quick. The medial cord gives you the lateral root of the median
nerve. Exactly. Because the median nerve has two roots. It has from the lateral wait. It has a lateral cord here. From the lateral cord, it has, you know, the one of the roots coming. What is that root? Medial root. So the other one has to be lateral root.
But why wouldn't the lateral root come from the lateral cord?
Because it's coming medially. It's not going laterally. It's going medially, okay? Medially towards the body. Okay. And so then we have, you know, because I want to get to the exam for the last part, that's why I'm rushing. It's not that I don't want to answer questions. And the ulnar nerve, and there are two other nerves coming from this medial cord. The in green color, those are your two cutaneous nerves are coming here. See here? Okay. And that is medial cutaneous nerve of the arm, medial cutaneous nerve of the forearm. So this is medial cutaneous nerve of the forearm. And this is medial cutaneous nerve of the arm. And so you have all the roots, I mean all the, what do you call, the nerves. These five nerves are called the terminal branches. These five nerves, musculocutaneous, axillary, radial, median and ulnar, these five are called the terminal branches of the brachial plexus. I don't have the time to put in the four branches, that means long thoracic, that means nerve to subclavius, and the dorsal scapular and suprascapular. Those four nerves, dorsal scapular and suprascapular, nerve to subclavius, nerve to subclavius, this one, and then long thoracic nerve. Those are coming from the roots of the brachial plexus. Okay, that you can put in, because you know long thoracic is C5, 6 and 7, and subclavius is C5 and 6, and suprascapular is C5 and 6, and nerve to subclavius also 5 and 6. Okay, so that the brachial plexus. What I'll do is, for Thursday we have the exam, so I can't finish. I mean the roots from the spinal roots of the brachial plexus, you can look at them yourself. So the next day when we start the class on this one, I would go to the, what's the next one here, is the apex base course divisions. I've done all those, so I will go to the okay, where will I go next? Okay, clinical significance. Yes, I have to take that in class. So next what I will go to is the clinical significance, axillary lymph nodes. Axillary lymph nodes. Then I will do the mammary gland and the shoulder joint. That's how we'll finish this outline. And the exam on Thursday includes all the material. That means from day one to last Thursday's class. That means I can ask you body cavities even. I can ask you the subdivisions of the body cavities. And I have a total of 61 or 62, something like that, questions. I have 50 multiple choice questions, so that means one side of the scantron will be good enough. And what is really important, please listen to me. I have exams are numbered. The number of the exam must be entered on the scantron, on the scantron, and your name must be entered on the exam. Now, I'll have questions, fill in the blanks, you know, describe, discuss, explain. These three should give me, you should give me, what is it, where is it, what does it do? Is there any clinical significance? If I ask you for the femoral triangle, you have to tell me, where is the femoral triangle? What does it contain? What does it do? What's the clinical significance? What's an example of a clinical significance in the femoral triangle? Saphenous varix, femoral hernia, those are clinical significances. Just even one word you need to give me if it has clinical significance. Then I have a form of question. I will stop, like I would ask, which of the following is, you know, correct for, say, the lymph node? Which of the following is correct for the lymph node? That you will get because it's straightforward. Which of the following, and then you look at the choices and cross off and do that. Now the other is, all of the following statements are correct or true for the humerus except which? All of the following statements are correct. That means four statements will be correct, one of them will be wrong. So how you should approach that kind of question is, see if that is true or false, true or false, like true or false. Look at each of the choices, it's true. No, like that, cross off, this is your exam, you can write on it, and then you transfer your correct answer to that. So when you see that, a lot of times people don't, they read, they accept, they just don't pay any attention to it. They just choose one right one there, okay? That's not what I'm looking for. When I say all of the following are correct about, you know, the lumbar plexus of nerves, except which, so I may give 10 different versions of the spinal roots. So you have to pick, you know, the correct, the wrong spinal root. Okay? And so that's a, no, that's where people will say there's no point in then telling me afterwards, I thought this is what you were asking. No. You should read the question. You should, if I ask you to describe the, the arches of the foot, you have to tell me how many arches, where are they, what are they, how are they formed, what is supporting them. You have to give me that, okay? Even though I haven't covered that in class, but it's in the outline, and I said I can't go because the time was, you know, up or over, okay? And then you said to give me at least one question for showing up for class, okay? And so I think when I agree with a class, it is like signing up with Faustus Faust. You know, it's with your blood you're signing. So I agreed with the Faustus Faust. So here I have to give her a question. The cutaneous innervation to the adjacent surfaces of the skin between the big toe and the second digit is on the exam. I have a diagram there. Okay? So you look at it and you indicate. He said repeat it. And so cutaneous innervation to the adjacent part. Cutaneous means the skin, remember? Cutaneous means the skin. And so here, here is the big toe. So remember that little part here? This is cutaneous innervation, because I don't remember all of them. I don't remember any difficult ones. I don't remember, that's why, okay? And so here, cutaneous innervation to this area of the skin. I have a diagram there, and I will say pick, you know, whichever nerve that is coming there, and I've given the choices. And I have an x-ray of some bones. I have another x-ray of a bone, and so that means, you know, you need to look at that. And so let me see what else. Yeah, I think I have matching questions. In two places I have matching questions. Five questions here, you know, 43 to whatever, or 5 to 10 whatever. Then I have lettered A, B, C, D, E on the right side. You look at the question here, then you pick A or B or C or D. Some of them you use more than once, others you don't even use it. Okay?
So be careful. It's very easy. Matching is easy.
Sarah, you are here. Sarah, take your quiz. Those of you who are here, please take your quiz.